right. Yes. And here's Standard Baker. He's also a son.
Well, my...
Which Mr. Baker are you?
I'm Dr. Roger Denial Baker.
You're Roger Baker.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so, come down this morning. So you are Floyd Wright, is that
Dr.
correct?
Dr. Beale's sister was my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Beale was my grandmother. In other words, my mother's mother.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Beale's sister.
Mary Beale was Dr. Beale's sister.
Was Mary Beale.
Was my mother's mother, actually. Florence McLeod. The daughter of...
Was your mother.
Was my mother, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now let's get this straight. Dr. Beale's sister was Mary Beale, and she was Floyd Wright's...
Oh.
My maternal grandmother, actually. Mm-hmm. Floyd Wright's maternal grandmother. And also Charles Lawrence, his maternal grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have a twin sister who is not here today.
Yeah.
So, I know she'd enjoy being here, but she lives, we didn't know about this till late this week. I think it was,
Well, we didn't either.
No, we didn't either.
Oh, right?
Yeah.
We
were actually down at Miami Beach, at a convention and flew directly up here.
Mm-hmm.
We live in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see now, where does McLeod go?
It's his mother.
Oh, yeah.
Florence McLeod.
Yeah, Florence McLeod is my mother, yes.
M-C-L...
Capital C, C-L-O-U-T-H, yes.
Florence McLeod is... Floyd Wright.
Don't touch anything, but you may look at all of them. Show sister Jane watch.
So we have to
Floyd Wright's mother?
Florence McLeod was my mother. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Good. Mm-hmm. Where's your mother? She's no longer.
She died in 1935.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, now, did your sister work up a Beale genealogy?
My sister didn't do it, but Charles has one copy of the Beale genealogy, but I don't know who did it. Charles?
Yes.
Do you know who compiled that Beale genealogy that you have?
No, I'm not sure. I've got it in the car.
Don't you think Rachel Baker did it?
Rachel did at all.
No.
It was some member of your family that did it.
Well, I believe it was I'm not sure if it was William James Beale himself that compiled it.
Well, he started
the black cover.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But oh, did he do it himself?
Uncle James did.
Yes. He did it.
But then yes, he did. There is one that's carried on with the other generations.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been your grandmother's song. It's added to it. Now, we have that at the hotel room. We didn't bring it with us because we had so much material.
Do you want to go get it? Do you want me to run back and get it for you?
It's in the envelope.
It's the same thing.
It's in the sack, in the envelope, the one that's in the manila envelope.
Well, we've been just going genealogy with Bakers as much as Beale's, you know, because this morning we had breakfast and we had Stannard and his wife Gladys Baker, and then we had Inga, who was Morris's wife, and she's, you see, he was a baker, and Beale and Peggy Hyde, and Beale is the son of Alice Baker, Roger's oldest sister, you see, Alice Baker Hyde. Oh. Well, as soon as he gets here, which I'm sure he will,
he's on the program.
And then See, who else did we have? there were 11 of us sitting down.
Well, not so wonderful.
Yeah. So we've had a bakery reunion as well as a meal.
Well, I've been reading. I was quite interested in the.
I don't have a copy of it at all.
What was that book? Death to Traitors.
Oh,
they go back to the Civil War.
You ought to get Stannard, who has been getting all these letters together.
Yeah.
And he's just full of Baker lore of the Secret Service and everything, you know, that was.
Well, this book, one of the principal sources of material was Ray Stannard Baker and his Mrs. Ray Stannard Baker, and of course the Baker family. That they're listed as one of the principal sources of material in that book.
Well, of course, Lafayette was the founder, really, of the Secret Service.
Mm-hmm.
And he had plenty to talk about.
You were perfectly right. That was not Grandfather Beale in the portrait. Your friend said you thought it didn't look natural. That's why it didn't look natural. It wasn't him. They made a mistake.
They put up Kenzie's portrait.
And Cousin Daddy said it doesn't look just right. So
no.
I think she should be commoner
of course
sharp eyesight.
And I went followed me around. I said, that's a good painting. Somebody's done a good painting.
In your husband's family, there were four children?
Yes.
That is your husband.
The eldest was Alice. He died last year. And her son is Beale Baker Hyde, who will be here today. And then Stannard was the second child. Then Roger. And then Rachel. And Rachel was not able to come. She is Mrs. Robert Napier. And is in Chatham, Massachusetts.
His first name really is James, isn't it?
James
Stannard. Yes. I knew that.
There is a very good portrait.
So.
I'd like to meet the other grandson.
Very nice to meet you, sir.
Retired from Northwestern University. Their wives are here, and also a great grandson.
Good
to see you at the moment.
Who is also a botanist named Beale.
Carrying it on.
His birthday. Eleanor.
Very good. Quite an occasion. I told John, I don't know why, but you get a little bit of a we can always say this is good for them.
Yeah, good for my wife.
Nice to meet you, Ms. Baker. Very nice to meet you.
We were just meeting in Chatham.
Marvelous.
Now, who is that?
This is William James Beale's sister, Mary.
Oh, my goodness.
And
who is that?
This is DeWitt.
McCloud.
Oh, we're going to say. Now, these are yours? Or?
Mr.
Part of family.
Part of family.
Turn around and show the pictures again, please.
Now, when were these taken,
sir? Move in real close.
Those would be about 18.
Can you move in real close right there?
85.
I want a thing like that.
Is this what you want?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes. Sister.
Yes.
Well, good. Here we go.
These are his children.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so that's the next generation. So that'll be for 25 years later. Yeah. That's marvelous.
Could you look up towards Dr. Wharton, please?
Instead of the picture. Why? I don't know.
Can you move over this way? Just a bit.
Good. 1897 and worked for Dr. Bill, lived with him because he's a nephew.
Mm-hmm.
and he lived with him while he was going here to college. That would be Caroline Scott.
Well, you know, last Friday we had the Patriarchs Luncheon, and the oldest living Michigan State graduate is a Dr. Velvet.
He was born in 1875.
He was in the class of 1896.
And he comes every mother's year. Brother.
Oh, yeah. And he keeps saying, I'm a practicing veterinarian.
And how old is he?
Well, I really don't know. He's in his 90s.
96.
That picture of Larry Beale looks like my mother. I have a picture of my mother, and it's just like that.
This is,
so really,
my goodness.
Oh, isn't that a marvelous one?
This is,
yes,
this
indeed.
Is brother, yes. Sister.
Is that Otis Beale?
Otis, yeah. That's Otis Beale, yes.
This one is Otis. Mm-hmm. This is my grandmother.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
This is Dr. Beale.
Mm-hmm.
Still have the same eyes, too.
That's a good.
Oh, isn't that,
that's
wonderful.
Oh, that is marvelous. Okay. He's a great man.
Very good. Well, I'll see you a little while.
How many of you have family do you
have?
I know that name.
Yeah.
And he was going to, he roomed with Dr. Beale here on the campus when, while he was going to school here.
Mm-hmm.
I think I do.
I think you do. I think there was one copy, wasn't there?
Yes, I think I have a copy of this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, sometimes grandfathers miss people like this. Don't miss them, but they get mislaid.
Yes. Our things have been through two fires.
Yeah.
Toasted. The state of Michigan has a very good genealogy library.
Is that right?
It's quite, and they. Not only of people, families here in Michigan, but they have quite a few books from other states, New York and Connecticut, Massachusetts, and they're quite thorough.
Where is that? That's in Lansing?
Yes, it's on Michigan Avenue. But, well, it's just this side of the railroad tracks on Michigan Avenue.
Do they have a historical society here?
Yes, but there's a Lansing, a Greater Lansing Historical Society, and also a Michigan Historical Society. The Michigan Historical Society has their headquarters in Ann Arbor, not here. But they.
The reason I ask is I've been going through things on my father's side.
Yes.
Clean out a lot of stuff, throw away old letters and things, but trying to patch together some things. And my grandfather on my father's side was lived here in Lansing for a while. Matter of fact, he was married here.
Yes.
And there's some funny gaps in his history here that I thought I might try someday to fill in.
I was just the other day. I was reading your father's biography,
yeah.
And I run onto the piece that your father was one of the founders of People's Church here in East Lansing.
But, matter of fact, that was just being put together when we left East Lansing.
Yes,
we left East Lansing. My grandfather's uncle came out from Western New York and settled in a brand new colony before Lansing was here at a place that was later known as Delta, which is west of here on the Grand River. At that time, it was he wrote letters that were sent from Grand River City and postmarked in DeWitt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There was no Lansing at that time.
No.
And a matter of fact, I have some some letters on them. And then he must have brought his family out from New York sometime and settled there. Whether he was a farmer or not, I don't know.
Yeah. What, where in New York State did they come from?
Stafford, which is in New York, near Rochester.
Yeah,
south and west of Rochester.
You know, if my father's people come from Geneseo, New York. That is south of Rochester.
Well, this is in the same area.
Yeah.
That's the same area. Yeah. This is Genesee County.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You're taking pictures of you.
You know, which one is she?
Well, she's a niece of W.J. Beale. She doesn't have song room. And she's the one who sent me a thing that I sent to Beale.
This lady here in the blue coat.
Mm-hmm.
I think
a little bit better for us this afternoon, but here to make up for the inadequacies of the weather, I'd like to introduce President Clifton Wharton to welcome you here this afternoon. President Wharton.
Not a warm welcome, that's right. Ladies and gentlemen, although we cannot take responsibility for the weather, we can sincerely welcome you to Beale Garden. I think that this particular occasion and your presence here is most fitting. The length of time which any of us spend here on this global sphere, measured in terms of the life of the sphere, is indeed most short. And I suspect that each one of us, in differing ways, would like to feel that the time which we spend is well spent, and that it makes a contribution to those whom we leave behind, who go after us, and that we have in fact made a significant contribution. Dr. Beale measures up on all of those measures and standards, and this particular garden is just one manifestation of that. And therefore, I'm indeed most happy to welcome you here in connection with the centennial celebration of Beale Gardens. Thank you.
Thank you, President Wharton. And now we will proceed with the formal portions of the ceremony. Which will involve the unveiling of a bronze marker that commemorates this garden, and to introduce this and to participate in the unveiling will be Dr. Dale Harpstead, the chairman of the Department of Crop and Soil Sciences, and accepting the marker on behalf of the family of Dr. Beale will be Dr. Roger Baker, grandson of Dr. Beale. Dr. Harpstead.
Members of the Beale family, President Wharton, Senator Pittenger, and friends and visitors of the Beale Gardens. It's been said many times, in many ways, by various people, that any community that fails to study and appreciate its historical underpinnings is destined to recommit many of the errors that were made by individuals who were investigating and experimenting on our behalf. I think that it is especially appropriate that we take time today to recognize not a new point in history, but rather to recognize history that has been written and history that is continuing to be put down. We're not here to rewrite nor add to that history, merely to put in some punctuation marks. Certainly those punctuation marks are not periods, but rather commas and semicolons that draw attention to the important things that have been done for us in the past and left to live with us in the present. I'll never forget that as a student, more years ago than I care to remember, I came in contact with Dr. Beale's work, first of all in seed longevity studies, and then in graduate school when we studied the methods of breeding and development of hybrid corn. I was again brought in contact with his great contributions and early contributions to what became a massive and magnificent revolution in our history, hybrid corn. Those contributions to me were exceedingly significant. And then when you realize that these were only a very small part of his total effort, this is indeed a very remarkable and wonderful occasion. I'm exceedingly proud to have been part of this unveiling ceremony, and that we here can take this brief moment to commemorate something that is indeed a great event.
Ladies and gentlemen, I was delighted to receive an invitation to participate in the ceremonies commemorating the establishment of the Botanical Gardens in 1873 by my grandfather, Professor William James. And I'm especially delighted at the opportunity to accept this marker in behalf of the various Beale tribes. During the first decade of the 20th century, I was a frequent, delighted, and a fascinated visitor to these famous gardens. I held on to Grandfather Beale's hand as we walked from Grandfather's home, now the President's house, to the steps that descended into the gardens. We must have made this happy journey hundreds of times. Grandfather Beale would name the plants, the bushes, and trees, and mention the scientific names as well, so I would get a proper start in botanical lore. I shall never forget his telling me about burying a lot of seeds deep in the ground in old whiskey bottles and digging them up long after to see if they were alive. This was his experiment on the persisting viability of seeds buried in the ground for years. I understand this testing activity is still in progress. I remember the island in the pond where stood a beautiful specimen of poison sumac, which my brother Stan and I dared each other to handle. Thereby, I had my first lesson in investigative medical dermatology. I remember another vivid memory was a visit to the botany building looking for Grandfather Beale. It was much further away in those days than it is here, and now I understand it's the journalism building. I entered a room where Grandfather and a dozen students, each with his own microscope, were examining slides of plants. A magnificent teacher, he did not tell his small grandson to go away, but rather beckoned to me to climb onto his knee and look through the barrel of the microscope at the fascinating cells. This little drama pleased Grandfather, the students, and me no end. I remember his coming to our house on Delta Street, now long since gone, to fetch me for a visit to the Beale home on the campus. As Grandfather and I walked along that soft, cool path through the arboretum, I would pull my hand from his, run ahead, and shinny up and down a small tree, then run to catch up to hold his hand again. He taught my brother, Stan, and me to use a small axe to make man-sized wood chips and to use a hammer to drive nails. Our first subject was a pumpkin. The nails went in more easily. Grandfather Beale published in 1898 a small book entitled Seed Dispersal. His preface states, "This little book is prepared with the thought of helping young botanists and teachers. Unless the reader has followed in detail by actual experience some of the modes of plant dispersion, he can have little idea of the fascination it affords or the ritual rewards in store for patient investigation. In chapter 3, there is a passage of value to you dwellers in this lovely region. Grandfather recognized drama in his plant world. He wrote, "Two grasses in fierce contention." In growing a lawn at the Michigan Agricultural College, a little Bermuda grass was scattered with June grass, and the struggle has been most interesting. In the spring, and for 6 weeks in autumn, when moisture usually abounds and the weather is cool, June grass thrives and little else is seen. In the dry, hot weeks of July and August, June grass rests, and the Bermuda, which continues to spread, assumes control of the lawn with but little of the June grass in sight. Each struggles for possession and does the best it can, and to some extent one supplements the other, with the result that at all times from spring to fall there's a close mat of living green which delights the eye and is pleasant to the feet that tread upon it. When Grandfather Beale retired from MAC at 77 years of age, he did not retire from teaching, observing, experimenting, or hating quack grass. He moved to Amherst, Massachusetts to live with us for a busy 14 years. In these years, he taught me poultry raising with scientific crop nesting, beekeeping, and to all of us, a vivid course in botany with extensions into forestry, orchard, and gardening lore. It was in 1915 that he published a history of the Michigan Agricultural College and biographical sketches of trustees and professors. I typed some of the manuscript when I was 13 years old. During those years with his daughter and family in Amherst, he made many happy pilgrimages back to East Lansing to see his colleagues, the progress of his plantings and of his students, and most of all, to enjoy the college which he so loved. There is a bond, I feel sure, both genetic and environmental, that influenced me to enter the field of medicine, and more particularly to develop my interest in medical mycology. In a sense, how plant life causes harmful fungus disease. In all my adult professional life, while I have been studying human pathology and mycotic disease, I feel that dear Grandfather Beale is still holding my hand.
Thank you very much, Dr. Baker. And now to present the governor's proclamation and the joint legislative resolution, I'd like to introduce the Honorable Senator Philippo Pittenger. Senator Pittenger.
Thank you very much. I'd just like to read briefly the governor's executive declaration. In observance of May 12th through the 19th, 1973, as William James Beale Week. During his tenure at Michigan Agricultural College from 1870 to 1910, Professor William James Beale made numerous contributions to the fields of botany, crop science, horticulture, forestry, and landscape architecture. This year, his most valuable physical legacy, the W.J. Beale Botanical Garden, completes 100 years of service to Michigan State University and the state. This garden, which has achieved widespread recognition throughout the country and the world, has been chosen as a symbolic focal point for a commemorative effort in honor of its founder. Therefore, I, William G. Milliken, Governor of the State of Michigan, urge all citizens to join with the Michigan State University community in giving appropriate recognition to the memory of William James Beale, a revolutionary man of science who made numerous contributions to Michigan State University and to the body of human knowledge in plant science. Given under my hand this 10th day of April, in the year of our Lord, 1973. William G. Mills. I'd also like to present to the Michigan State University a concurrent resolution commemorating the 100th anniversary of William G. Beale Botanical Garden. And I'll just read briefly a couple of the whereases here. Spend to serve the students as an educational instrument while extending a hand of welcome to visitors who wish to add to their knowledge and enjoyment of plants. It's resolved by the Michigan Senate that the Michigan Legislature join in the observance of the 100th anniversary of the W.J. Beale Botanical Garden by commemorating the week of May 12th through the 19th of 1973 as William J. Beale Week. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Bender. Now, briefly, I would just like to point out a few of the aspects of this garden. Many of you, I realize, have been around with guides to hear the details of it, and I would merely like to acknowledge the tremendous contribution of a large number of people over the ensuing 100 years from the establishment of this garden to its present, beautiful, and far more important than its beauty, its tremendous utility to the instruction of plant sciences for the not only the students of the university, but the people of the general public from the local area and from around the state and nation who come here to participate in enjoying it. About 1950, skipping over nearly half or more of its prior existence, three-fourths of its existence, the garden was completely reorganized and replatted, and we're indebted to the ingenuity and genius of Milton Barron, who is the head of campus park and planning on this campus, for the layout that led not only to the sort of grand sweep that was created in that process, but to an equally important one that you as taxpayers will appreciate, because as a result of that laying out, we were able to maintain the garden with two man years per year rather than seven or eight, which had prior been the case. After this layout was set up, the garden was extended and continued as a result of putting in the extension on the library here and the extension on the women's gymnasium here, so that the garden was rather vastly extended from its original rather small portion that existed at the time of Dr. Beale's retirement. In 1955, Dr. George Parmalee, an ecologist locally grown and trained, was designated as the curator, and it is to Dr. Parmalee's insight into the habits and qualities of the plants that the rather interesting and stimulating ecological arrays that you will find around the place are to him we are indebted. Now, in about 1957, we had the good fortune to hire Mr. Johannes Wilbrink as head gardener and assistant to the curator. Mr. Wilbrink has diplomas from two schools of horticulture in the Netherlands, and for the past 16 years it has been his tender loving care that has brought the garden to the high state of polish that you see here today. The garden, as you have heard in the proclamations and in the statements of other people, is a mainstay in the instructional activity of the university and an important ingredient in the culture richness that characterizes Michigan State University. At this point, we will break up here in the garden and move over to 104 Wells Hall, where the program will continue.
How are you getting along?
Very well, thank you.
You came up from Ypsilanti with,
yes,
with somebody?
Yes.
We were wondering whether you would hear about this. Somebody must have contacted you.
Well, Mary Steer gave me a program, and I sent it to Standard Baker.
Oh, you sent it to Standard Baker?
Yes, and they didn't know that it was coming off either.
I see Dr. Parmalee. I talked to his secretary yesterday and told her who I was, and she said, well, we don't know about you, but we've been trying to contact all the relatives.
Yes.
And apparently he didn't have much success in contacting the relatives because some of them, I guess, didn't hear about it.
Well, we have been, some of us haven't been conspicuous, you know.
Yeah.
Irish, Mr. Wright.
How do you do?
He is a descendant of my aunt, who was a brother or sister to Dr. Beale.
Oh.
So he's a grandson of...
See, I'm the grandson of Mary Beale, and you're related to her. How?
She's what? My aunt.
She was your aunt, and she was my grandmother.
Yes. Mm-hmm. See, you're another generation down.
Another generation, yes. Well, there's quite a few generations. There's at least one more.
Well, there are loads of Beals
behind
over
me.
The country.
Yes. The early 1900s,
yes,
you were a student here?
Yes, here at 4 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they are.
Well, there's probably not many of the buildings around here now. They're all new, a lot of,
yes,
new buildings.
That's true, I'm sure. I'm lost on campus now.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Alice Beale.
Alice Beale. And,
who is the daughter, the eldest daughter of Ray Standard Baker.
Yes. Yes. Cousin Jesse Beale Baker. On the Beale line. Where do we go in here?
Well, it looks as though the great bulk of the people that were in the garden have made it, and most of us have almost stopped shivering. Not quite, though, I must admit. One aspect of the program that was supposed to have taken place in the garden itself that, due to an oversight on my part, got omitted, we will now complete at this point in time. And this is a presentation of notification of acceptance for State Register of Historical Places for the Beale Botanical Garden. And to make that presentation, we'd like to introduce Mr. Jerry D. Rowe, member of the Michigan Historical Commission. Mr. Rowe.
Well, it is indeed a pleasure and an honor for me to participate in these ceremonies as a representative of the Michigan Historical Commission. When our commission began registering sites back in 1955, the legislature at that time established the State Registrar of Historic Places. As of this date, we have 600 of these such sites. I must confess that it is not typical to have a site such as this. Generally, it is a house or an office or an archaeological site. But frankly, I think this is an area where we ourselves must work in a certain direction, because this site is certainly just as important as any site on this campus or in the state of Michigan. It gives me a great pleasure to read the following letter, which acknowledges the action of the Michigan Historical Commission last month in Detroit by establishing Beale Gardens as one of Michigan's historical site locations. And I might also add that the frame itself does have some historical significance since it's made out of wood from the Capitol, as we're taking wood out. The letter is addressed to President Clifton R. Wharton, President of Michigan State University. Dear President Wharton, it is my pleasure to inform you that the Beale Botanical Garden has recently been approved by the Michigan Historical Commission for registration as a state historic site. This places the site on the state registrar of historic places for Michigan. The state registrar was established by Act 10 of Public Acts of 1955. Although registration is purely a designation and neither places restrictions on your property nor guarantees it any special protection, we are pleased to give official recognition to the Beale Botanical Garden as a historic site in Michigan. Congratulations, and with best wishes, sincerely, Martha M. Bigelow, Secretary of the Michigan Historical Commission. So on behalf of the Commission, Governor Milliken, Division of History, the Secretary of State, gives me a great pleasure to officially present this designation of Beale Botanical Gardens as a state historic site.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rowell. President Wharton, unfortunately, had another segment of his rather diverse duties to attend to and is off on with another group now. So on his behalf and on behalf of the faculty, students of Michigan State University, as well as the people of Michigan, I'm delighted to accept this designation of the garden as an historical site. While we are thinking about historical aspects and might even say historical characters, I'd like to introduce the author of the history of Michigan State University, Dr. Madison Kuhn. Dr. Kuhn, would you rise so that the people can see the author of the history of Michigan State University? Copies are on sale in the bookstore. And now to continue with the program, I'd like to introduce Dr. John Carew, the chairman of the Department of Horticulture, who will serve as the master of ceremonies for the completion of the program, a series of papers and a slideshow, which I think you will enjoy. Dr. Carew.
I want to compliment Dr. Parmalee on his early planning, because he has been the man behind much of the program today, and I recall several months ago his predicting that it would probably be cool this afternoon and we ought to have the speaking part of the program in a warm building, so that's your pure courtesy of his careful planning. Seriously, we have three presentations this afternoon that we know you will be very much interested in. They all go around the theme of Dr. Beale and his impact, the impact of his work, the impact of his research, his teaching, etc. I'd like to begin first by introducing Dr. William Drew, who is currently chairman of the Department of Botany at Michigan State University and has been chairman since 1948. He was educated at Harvard and at Michigan, has been a member of faculties at the Cambridge School of Liberal Arts, University of Tennessee, University of Missouri, Carleton College, has served in Ecuador, Colombia, a member of the U.S. Forest Service in Montana, and was a botanist on the Boyd expedition in Greenland. There is no one on our faculty at present who is better qualified to comment on the contributions of Dr. Beale and to talk about him as a plantsman. Dr. Drew.
Thank you, Dr. Carew. Members of the Beale family, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. I must make one slight correction, John. It's true that I did study at the University of Michigan biological station one summer. I suppose they have a grade recorded for me somewhere in their registrar's office. but that's as close as I came to getting a degree from the U of M. However, I did get a degree from the University of Massachusetts, or as it was known in those days, Mass Aggie. Well, today I am indeed privileged to play a part in the memorializing of the establishment of the Beale Botanical Garden, begun, as you know, by William James Beale a century ago. As I think you also may know from the splendid literature and handouts which have been given to you, indeed, I really think I could mention them and sit down because they have been so thoroughly and so beautifully done. But I'll try to come up with a few aspects that may be a little different. But as you know, the first plants that Beale established in the garden were about 140 species of native grasses and some legumes, which in a way reflect Beale's interest in providing a source of living material to demonstrate to students the forage plants useful for the farmers of Michigan, while at the same time indicating the initiation of a major collection of native grasses which were to be critically studied in the preparation of his famous two-volume work, The Grasses of North America. These volumes, published in 1887 and 1896 respectively, represent a major botanical accomplishment of which Beale was justly proud. While developing the botanical garden with more native grasses and later scores of other flowering plants gathered by exploration of nearly all corners of Michigan, Beale planted many trees and shrubs throughout the campus as it existed north of the Red Cedar River in the 19th century. The beautiful katsura from Japan, which you've seen near the plaque in the garden, the large, venerable Viburnum ciboldi, right next, in fact, to the plaque, ginkgos, exotic magnolias, and I believe even the large Ebonimus climbing over the old log cabin tool shed, all were planted by Beale to testify to his interest, his industry, and zeal in beautifying the campus. Incidentally, the story is told that when Beale returned to the campus following a trip of any length of time, he spent the first day or two in walking over the grounds, inspecting every last tree or shrub which he had planted. Their good health and welfare were of deep and abiding concern to him. Not only did he beautify the entire campus with his plants, but also he initiated the Arboretum and the Pineetum. The latter he established as an experiment for studying the growth of white pines, fully cognizant that it was not a site ideally suited to the growth of this species. Since Beale's retirement in 1910, but especially in the past 30 years, President Hanna actively encouraged the introduction to the campus of scores of new and interesting woody species. Yet many of Beale's introductions survive and continue to lend their beauty to our campus. As you are by now well aware, this remarkable man has been memorialized on previous occasions at MSU, nay, MAC, and MSC. The MSU Corn Foundation on another occasion, as mentioned by Dr. Harmstead, led by Beale's former student and himself an advocate in Iowa of using hybrid corn, Perry G. Holden, donated a bronze plaque now at the other end of the botanical garden near the pool to commemorate Beale's experiments of a pioneer nature on the value and feasibility of developing hybrid corn. Furthermore, it's perhaps less well known that the Association of Official Seed Analysts of America some years ago also presented to the university
a bronze plaque to commemorate Beale's very significant contributions to the development of a viable pure seed industry for crops of all kinds. And they called him the father of seed testing. At this point, it is appropriate to mention Beale's famous experiment on the viability of weed seeds, a project begun in 1879, which is to continue for several more decades, or as long as any seeds remain capable of germinating. Seeds of 23 common crop weeds were mixed with sand and placed in unstoppered pint glass bottles. And may I interject, I didn't know they were whiskey bottles. It isn't recorded as such in the literature, but I'm grateful for the information from his grandson. Whether or not they had whiskey in them before the seeds were put in is not recorded either, yes. But bottles were in turn buried on the campus with the open ends slanted downward and in a location rather secretly maintained. At increasing yearly intervals thereafter, a bottle was to be exhumed and the seeds tested for their germinability. You may be interested to learn that the last tests, which were conducted by Alexander Kivelon in 1970, 90 years after the beginning, revealed that the seeds of only a single species, the moth mullein, retained the viability to germinate. Whether the seeds of this species will still be viable at the next test in 1980, or even by the year 2000, is perhaps questionable. But some of you in attendance here today should still be around to find out for sure. By the way, there are 7 more bottles left to test. Good luck. Time is too limited to refer to all the contributions Beale made as a botanist, forester, horticulturist, agronomist, landscape architect, but they were legion. In all, he published 1,286 books, scientific papers, reports, and magazine articles, ranging from practical agriculture to pure botany. His Michigan Flora, first of its kind for the state, his 2-volume studies of native grasses in North America, studies in seed dispersal, his New Botany, and A Key to Distinguish Apple Varieties are among many outstanding publications. I find especially interesting in today's context of interest in the environment that Beale wrote a paper of ecological significance concerning the question of natural succession of jack pine and forests in Michigan. Just recall that during Beale's tenure at MAC, the magnificent white and red pine forests of Michigan were harvested, often leaving in their wake burned over stump land or sterile sandy plains. Beale was one of the few who early foresaw the importance of studying the ecological future of such lands. I'm also intrigued by his writing of 3 papers published in the proceedings of the ginseng growers, particularly since most correspondence relating to ginseng coming to the university nowadays is routed to me for a reply. What he wrote, I do not know, but to the best of my knowledge, there is no longer extant such a journal, and there are few, if any, ginseng growers still in business in Michigan. Despite a sometimes favorable market for this plant, the anthropomorphic root of which is so esteemed by the Chinese. In any assessment of the true greatness of this outstanding plantsman, one must include his teaching and the graduation under his tutelage of such internationally renowned plantsmen as Liberty Hyde Bailey, C.E. Bessey, the father of E.A. Bessey, a former chairman of our department here, L.M. Dewey, J.W. Toomey, C.S. Crandall, Hugh Potter Baker, and Eugene Davenport, to name a few. In part, at least, Beale's abilities as a teacher are related to several outstanding professors at Michigan and Harvard. His initial baccalaureate study at Ann Arbor under Professor Winchester
seems to have stimulated his desire to increase his education in natural history. For after completing an A.M. degree at Michigan in 1862, he entered Harvard University in April of the same year to study for a second bachelor's degree, Bachelor of Science, which he earned in 1865. At Harvard, he promptly came under the influence of the dynamic personality and radically different teaching methods of the great zoologist Louis Agassiz. Agassiz, I am sure, more than any other of Beale's professors at either Michigan or Harvard, instilled in him the philosophy of studying nature, not books. It is a further measure of Beale's greatness and maturity as a man, though young in years, that while he was absorbing new knowledge and new approaches to biological teaching under Agassiz, he was studying, as the only advanced student of botany, under the nation's and Harvard's brilliant systematist, Asa Gray. The remarkable point is that Agassiz and Gray were at odds, later very bitter odds, over the recently published Origin of Species by Charles Darwin, with Agassiz vehemently opposed and Gray enthusiastically supporting this concept, which was to revolutionize biology, if not philosophy, religious concepts, and science generally. Beale, it turns out, remained a lifelong friend and admirer of Agassiz and enthusiastically embraced his teaching methods. But he likewise was a lifelong friend of Gray and adopted his wholehearted endorsement of Darwin's concepts. Incidentally, Agassiz and Gray, toward the end of their careers, eventually reconciled the some of their differences. By 1870, when Beale was appointed to the MAC faculty, he had the new botany well in mind, although details were not published until 1880. One lasting tribute to his teaching methods is memorialized in Brown's, also on the campus, this time by the MSU foresters of the class of 1911, who established a plaque in the Pinetum, where his dictum, indicated there as "keep on squinting," comes through very clearly. I don't know if Beale apparently used both forms, just "keep squinting" or "and keep on squinting." But anyway, whatever they were, they got across and were well known by all his students. The student who did keep squinting often surprised himself eventually, after initial floundering and confusion, at how much he had really learned by very careful and prolonged study of the plant material without reference to texts. Beale just did not believe in feeding students a pap of lecture notes, since he wished to develop their concentration of powers of accurate, independent observation. This philosophy is also well phrased in such other oft-quoted dicta of Beale as, quote, "to be constantly giving information in science makes intellectual tramps and not trained investigators," unquote, or, quote, "an eye trained to see is valuable in any business," unquote. Somehow, in addition to teaching classes, supervising students in mandatory farm work, preparing labels for hundreds of plants in the garden, planting trees and shrubs, filling speaking engagements, answering by hand a multitude of letters, and writing assiduously, Beale found time to assemble and curate a very excellent collection of dried plants to establish the MAC herbarium. Even with the volunteer student assistance which he must have had, the building up of a collection of over 100,000 specimens and maintaining it in good condition was a major task. Yet Beale not only developed the finest collection of plants of Michigan at the time, but also, with a very slender budget, purchased named sets of plants from all over the world, a remarkable achievement in itself. Beale held many elective posts in botanical, forestry, horticultural, and scientific associations, as well as the state grange.
Indeed, Beale was a firm believer in organizations and often played a leadership role in establishing them. The Society for Promotion of Agricultural Science, the Association of Botanists of the United States Experiment Stations. I don't think that exists anymore, but anyway, he got it off to a start. The Michigan Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters, the American Pomological Society, the Botanical Society of America, and the American Association for the Advancement of Science were some of the organizations to which Beale devoted his energies and talents. In his lifetime, Beale received numerous well-deserved honors, including an honorary PhD from Michigan, a Doctor of Science degree from MAC, and a Doctor of Agriculture degree.